Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Same Old Wombles. So, are the kids all right after all? Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us who are responsible for bringing you Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated, non-partisan, and after 40 or more years of following the Dons, we still can't agree on which away game we're going to head to this season. We're the Same Old Wombles. I'm Mark Lewis, aka Tall Mark, long-time programme seller, and I've never received anything as payment for selling programmes, bar the odd bottle of water, to be frank. Today's Slim Down panel features Adam Proctor. Wonder what appropriate 80s pop image he'll be able to find to reflect the themes that we'll discuss on tonight's pod. And Matt Cooper, playwright, arts impresario. Is there no beginning to this man's talent? Not joining us this week is Niall Cooper. He's off being a media whore at the Labour Party conference. Firstly, before we kick off the pod, we'd like to send our wholehearted condolences from everyone on the Same Old Wombles team to all the family and friends of Dave McKnight, a long-term club volunteer in many guises, who tragically collapsed and died yesterday of a heart attack whilst helping out Chelsea women's game at King's Meadow. Dave is one of the good guys and will be sorely missed by everybody concerned and connected with AFC Wimbledon. Rest in peace, Dave. So tonight we're going to discuss what good's coming from the draw at Bradford. Has he done us any good whatsoever, on and off the pitch? What new players might we unearth from the Pizza Trophy this season, after all? And what should be right on top of the new CEO's intray? Of course, we'll have some numbers to lighten the mood. We're the Same Old Wombles. Welcome to episode 6.
All I wanna do is watch football. All I wanna do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Done what we should for the start. Well done, mate. Good start on Dave McKnight. I mean, I didn't know him awfully well, but he was a face that was always around and always smiling. Really nice guy.
Yeah, the always smiling thing is the thing I've seen in a number of tributes today. Just one of those tragic things that, you know, we lose people too soon. You don't know where they were health wise, or something suddenly gets you. But he just seemed to be someone that always tried to make a little bit of time for everybody, whoever they were, whether they had any connection to the club. He just smiled and said hello and obviously did a load of things to help out. In his professional life, he was a driving instructor. And I know he has helped and taught a number of women and fans to drive as well, obviously professionally. So he'll obviously all have that legacy. And I'm sure his funeral will be well supported and a number of women faces will be represented there, and probably Chelsea faces as well, because I know he helped out with Chelsea ladies quite a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Truly a nice guy. Truly, one of the sort of volunteering legends. But,
Absolutely right.
Yeah, there's quite a few things. I was looking on the official website, and I know there's a couple of things that are republished from the programme. And the one about him directing the players' coach or whatever to the first Sutton game because they got lost. So apparently they phoned him up and he had to direct the driver to actually get to the ground, which I thought was rather amusing. That's an amazing, you know, to volunteer at all those levels, including directing the coach to get to the first game. Yeah. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, very sad.
Yeah.
Pretty special. And he is one of the special people, as they say. Yeah. As we said, condolences to all his family and all those that know him. Yeah. So on a slightly brighter note, we didn't quite get that win on Saturday that we were all hoping and praying for. But we've had a couple of wins now in the Pizza Trophy. We discussed the Pizza Trophy at length last week. But what it has done is it's enabled some of those kids to come through. And have we now turned the corner? We ended up in the interesting situation. Having said that we needed experience in defence, we ended up losing Pierce to, I believe, a groin strain. Obviously, Gunter was away on international duty. But was that a blessing in disguise, after all? With a really young defence, we did pretty well.
It seems like we did a good job until the last minute. which is, it's really weird because I think anyone before the game, most people were predicting us to get slaughtered, you know. And I think a draw away from home at a side that are right near the top, people would be going, that is immense. That is a great result. But I think in a weird way, it does feel like it's a kick in the teeth. And I hope that, in actual fact, that drives us on for the next few games.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I think that force change made a made a massive difference, it seemed to. I'm not exactly sure what exactly changed, but suddenly we were actually attacking, which was kind of mad. I did originally think that maybe we had the front foot for maybe 60 minutes, but it's probably more like 45. And yeah, I thought it was a good game. It was sort of, no, it didn't look so, I mean, I had to watch an iFollow. I struggled to get it on my TV for about 20 minutes, which was annoying me, something chronic. Once I finally did, I could see what the, it looked so much better. But yeah, the last 10 after the, you know, 90 plus six or whatever, it was ridiculous. The referee had a bad game throughout anyway, so that was quite amusing. So who knows whether his stopwatch is broken or whatever. But we did the thing which I can't stand, which is try and play the game out by like running the ball into the corner flag and trying to dance around the corner with the ball, which normally ends up with it being taken off us and some sort of counter-attack building. So I was a little bit annoyed because I was like, please just carry on playing the same as you have. Don't change to the weirdness of trying to go to the corner flag and hold on to the ball, because I've never seen us do that well. So that was it. I felt we didn't play out the last 10 minutes properly, and there was a lot of added on time, but I'm not sure where that came from. But
probably our time wasting and the number of players we had booked and the number of substitutions and the fact that we were a relatively little club going to a relatively big club. You know, hats off to 351 away fans that went up to Bradford. Because I must admit, I've been there before, but even so, I wasn't, you know, particularly inclined based on current form and situation and the state of where, and as Adam says, the team were. We may have a new favourite player, though, and frankly, with this many names, this man deserves to be someone's favourite player. I just looked him up, and the young lad who made his full league debut, playing right wing back actually on Saturday, although I believe he's a central defender by trade. His full name is Isaac Efoloa Folorunso Olushor Ogundere, otherwise known as Isaac to his mates.
I thought
that another youth team product, 19-year-old, did really well.
I think he seemed to do really well. And also the one thing, have you seen that clip on Twitter and such like, of that right at the end, they've equalised, the player runs right over and shouts in his face, he just walks away from it. I thought, well played, young man, well played. I think that's going to really endear him to the club, to the team. And if we've unearthed someone like him, I think that's brilliant. And if you get Jack Curry in there as well, it does show that we've got a decent sort of academy coming through. I think always the worry is, Do you play them too much? Can you overplay some of these kids that are quite talented? Have you got to ease them in bit by bit? And it'd be really interesting to see, I mean, how Gunter might feel coming back and not getting into the squad, because obviously he wants to run a games to hopefully at least get some touches in the World Cup.
Yeah, I fear Gunter may be the 23rd player out of a 23-man squad. Or however big a World Cup squad is, because even when Wales played two games and they'd been knocked out, he still didn't even get a minute off the bench.
I can only assume that he, because he's played, he's the record, what's it called, caps for the club, and I think he's probably been around there so long, he's almost more of a back staff, you know, player, much like Darius was last season.
I liked him as a back staff player. I mean, Mark said at the beginning, like, do you think we've turned a corner? I think it's going to depend on what happens on Saturday. That's the thing. And I don't know if I can make it because of the train strike, so I'm not sure what my timetable is going to look like. And I know we're being advised not to travel unless necessary. But I'm thinking if a train gets me there, I think it's necessary. I think it's necessary. So I'm hoping, because this Saturday, it's got that, like, at home. I don't know who we're playing on Saturday.
Colchester, one of the few teams below us.
Where we got.
With the caretaker manager.
Okay, when did the caretaker manager take over?
Oh, he's had one game already, so he can't have the caretaker manager bounce.
That's all right then. Okay. Well, we've got to win Saturday. We have to win. Like, to really, off the back of that performance, I think that's, you've got to win at home on the next game. You have to.
We talked about it a few times about the mix in midfield, both in terms of formation and in terms of who the actual players would be. But I think, really, if they can come through a game like Saturday and say, OK, so Asal's playing up front. Do we want him to play up front? No. Do we think he's the best option? Because NYC is obviously out long term, and the less you hear about it, the more you fear that actually if we see NYC play again this season on loan, then that may be a good thing, certainly until January anyway. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong, but that may well be it. So if Sal's his striker, and then you've got obviously the other big guys rotating, Davison and Hudlin and potentially Bartley as well, then your midfield mix has got to come from Pell and Magoma and Chislett. And Chislett's free kicks, I mean, I got to say, I was surprised we kept him. I thought he would have been jettisoned into last season. I hold my hand up to that one. But quality of his free kicks. No one's talking about the Bradford goalkeeper. As usual, they're giving pelters to Zanef because that's just easy to do. And we have to mention Zanef, obviously, because Niall's not here to do it for us. But, yeah, sometimes you've just got to say it's a quality free kick. It was a quality free kick by the Bradford guy against us. It was an even better free kick by Chislett.
It's amazing. And he's great. I mean, it does look like the one of the big problems that we have at the moment is where Asal fits in. Because I think everyone would agree that he's technically our best player. And every time, and it's the comments from the away fans after the matches all the time saying how good he is. And how do you fit him in if you've got to fit NYC? Where do you put him? Because then you're dropping Chislett, who's brilliant, and Asal is not the Pell type character, he's not Magoma kind of character, so you know, we've got an amazing problem with Asal, but we're better with him in than not.
But if he's going to dribble but not pass and therefore shoot, then I guess playing him up front is as good as anything.
Yeah, maybe like he's the kind of player that like we could turn into a super sub or something during this season. I don't know.
I think he's our best player. I think he can change. I think he can turn games around. It'd be very difficult to leave him constantly on the bench to bring him off. I just think that would be a really difficult decision.
We haven't got enough. Yeah, I think Matt's right. We don't genuinely have enough other players that are creative enough. Obviously, we haven't got McCormack anymore, and we know why, and we're relatively happy about that. And he's doing oh so well at Bristol Rovers, isn't it? Oh, what a shame. We haven't got, obviously, Widoni, and he is doing pretty well considering how Huddersfield are struggling. And therefore, you need as many creative players as you can, you know. Pell is the box-to-box guy. Magoma is silky, but is still playing too deep. So really, if you haven't got Asal creating stuff and shooting and just being a pest, frankly, to opposition defences, then we're going to struggle to make chances, let alone score goals.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
So we don't have a rant of the week this week because we know that there's going to be a lot of discussions ongoing with regards to the Doncaster elections, and there's been loads of stuff online, and there will be more stuff online, I'm sure, for the next 6 weeks or so until the candidates have put in their manifestos. We know who's standing and we know what's going on. It's going to be remiss of us not to discuss Doncaster election stuff, though. Obviously, Niall's not around to be involved, but I found a nice quote, which I meant to actually read out last week, but I'll read it out now. And this is Lyndon Johnson, former American president, talking about J. Edgar Hoover, who I believe was the head of the FBI, if I'm not mistaken. And Johnson said of Hoover, well, it's probably better to have him inside the tent pissing out rather than outside the tent pissing in. which got me thinking, obviously there's going to be frank exchanges of views about Donstar stuff, but actually, could it be productive to have opposing views, opposing opinions on the board itself to be able to get yin and yang and properly get all the details and issues out in the open? What do you think, guys?
Well, the board needs to be elected by the members. So it will be down to the members to decide whether they want yin and yang. In terms of who should stand, I mean, occasionally people talk about, you know, there's lots of Dons fans who are, disunited, at odds with those kind of things. I don't know how disunited we really are, to be honest. Again, I think I said that before. But yeah, the more voices that stand, the more choice people have to pick the kind of representation they want on the board to inform the strategic oversight of the club. So, yeah, I mean, diversity is a good thing.
I mean, I think it's really difficult. I'm pretty sure that, if you look at all of, and I don't do this. I mean, I don't do this because I'm a focused Wimbledon fan.
Of course, you are.
I don't look at the other boards or what other people are saying. I'm not interested in what the Morecambe people are thinking or any of these, or Huddersfield. I don't care. But I'm guessing that if they've gone on a run of bad results, there's a call to change the manager, change the formation, or change the ownership. Okay, that's the thing, and that happens all the time. So if you've got a run of bad results, you're looking for something to blame. And we have got the biggest target out there because we're fanned on. So it's a huge, easy target. So if we start going on a bad run of results, you know, that's the target to get. And then people can go, yeah, but our, you know, form has been, you know, rubbish for the last 3 or 4 seasons, you know. And I'm not saying it's been great at all, but we have been a League One side. So there's a whole division below us that we're not in our position. Do you know what I mean? And we've come so far in 20 years. It's absolutely incredible. But, you know, a string of bad results ultimately leads is an easy target, you know. That's the problem. And if we get people standing who've got different opinions, if they get elected, then so be it. And I think they're going to find very quickly how difficult it is. And also they're going to understand that they're not, you know, The role of the board is not to choose the squad. It's not to choose the manager. It's none of those things. It's an oversight thing. So that, you know, so all these things that are going wrong, the board doesn't have. It can't go into JJ on a Saturday morning and go, listen, mate, I think you've got this wrong, pal. You ought to be playing huddling up front. Do you know what I mean? Drop David. It's just like it's not like that. So I think people have got delusions about what they can do on the DTB. And it's a lot of stress and you get a lot of hassle. The thing that upsets me the most is I think there are some really good people who are on the board. Bright, intelligent people. And they are getting battered on social media. And they're not going to stand. They're not going to stand again. We're going to lose a whole load of people, I'm sure of it, because they're getting abuse. And, you know, I'm pleased I'm not a vindictive person to, you know, but it's just like these people are going to, if they get on, you know, and we get another string of bad results or something else goes wrong, you know, then they've also got a target on their backs as well. I think it's awful that we're going to lose some really good people. I'm still to this day, kind of understand about Zav, but he was a good communicator and a great chair, and I think it's sad that we've lost him. We lost him because, you know, he got bullied online and he reacted.
So we don't know the ins and outs of this specific situation. It hasn't ever been publicised. Maybe it should have been, but it wasn't. But you're right. Good thing, bad things happen to good people, and people are human beings, so they're going to react in certain ways. What also concerns me potentially is not only do we lose good people off the board, and sometimes everyone has a shelf life and they need to get back to some type of normality, and they've got private lives, and who knows where they're at with their own professional lives and emotional relationships and so on. And being a Don's Trust board member can be all encompassing, as I understand. But equally, if it's going to put people off from standing because they look at it and think, hang on, this is quite toxic. Why is it toxic? All I'm trying to do is offer my professional skill towards a good cause because I care about things, because I'm a Wimbledon fan and I'm a professional in marketing or sales or organization or communication or whatever the particular field that person works in. If they then choose not to stand because they feel, actually, no, that's more than my life's worth, as I say, then that's a loss as well. And I hope that won't be the case, you know. Obviously, we've got a few weeks before that happens. I believe nominations open up on Saturday. There's a week or so for that. The SGM is Thursday, the 13th of October. So we definitely encourage as many people as possible. A lot of people obviously have their own views about the Don's Trust, and they're allowed to have their own views, and I respect them one way or the other. The usual story, as I said from that quote there from Lyndon Johnson, is actually, if you want to change something, if you feel something really desperately should be changed, then get involved. Make yourself and make sure you're a member at the right time so you can actually vote. There are a number of motions that have been put up on the Don's Trust website now, and they are specific motions. They are the board themselves. I've read through some of them. A lot of them are quite wordy, which is another matter entirely. But what they do say is, we, the board, accept that things haven't been done right. We're now trying to do them a little bit better and a little bit differently. And I think people, the board and the institution and the club, obviously, deserve for people to give them the time of day to look through those resolutions, read through. There've been some fans have put some stuff up there as well, some resolutions relating to using upstairs the large hospitality networking area after a game, which I think is a great idea personally, and that's going to be a great idea to be able to do through the winter. And if that's a resolution which we as a fan-owned club can bring, the fans themselves bringing it and Don's Trust members obviously seconding it and then bringing it to a vote and that being put through, then good for them, so much the better.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing for me, which is what frustrates me about some of this, is that, like Matt says, it's this easy argument going back between fan-owned and not fan-owned. I don't think I think that totally skews what we actually need to do. And it's really frustrating because we've moved into a brand new stadium in COVID, much bigger operation, much bigger numbers of people to deal with, more staff that are employed. You know, so we need to look again at how do you run a club which has a serious number of volunteers, a particular way of bringing income streams, and how that might be done, rather than just instantly like, oh, we need more money from some person who's just going to throw money year in, year out into the pot. And I've talked about this before, but it's, you know, once that happens, they are going to want return on investment in some capacity, and that will bring all the typical investment and infrastructure that other clubs have, which make all of the clubs in the English pyramid system pretty much unsustainable. And I don't think we should be running an unsustainable business. But what I do think we should be thinking about is, okay, we've moved into a brand new stadium. We've got brand new opportunities. We aren't doing things, you know, we can't do things the same way as we did before because we're trying to do something better, bigger, more inclusive, more outreach, more community. We're back in Wimbledon, all that kind of stuff. Let's focus on the good things. Let's do that stuff right, solidify things, and remember that the club is more than the 90 minutes on a Saturday for lots and lots of good reasons. And those good reasons need to be kept. And I think for that is about quality values. And those values come from the owners. And at this point in time, those owners are the people that are the fans that are invested in the club, wherever they are in the world. And they have the best interests for the club to look the best. So I think let's stop having this conversation about fan ownership versus the model that exists. It's so frustrating because we could continue to do things in an interesting and better way, you know. And I think we get that right. I can't see why we can't continue to progress on and off the pitch in positive ways that has a positive impact on the wider community and the wider network of football. So it just frustrates me that we come back to this thing. As soon as something starts going wrong, the easy target is picked. Oh, it's because you're fan owned. But it's not that. There's other things that were going on.
Adam, mate, that is a brilliant pitch. Have you been practicing? Because that's just.
I've been thinking.
I think one of the things that's really interesting. I mean, we're going to have a new MD, aren't we? We're going to have a new MD starting soon, and I think that's going to be giving them time to get things sorted. I think would be brilliant. It'd be nice to get a bit of an update on the head of football, but to have a new to know that we're getting an MD in, I think would be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a massive thing that. To kind of, again, to start to think about that restructure, allow the MD to lead specific things. Obviously, the director of football, I think that is the MD that's being announced this week, I think, if I remember rightly, maybe Thursday or something.
I think it is. I think the MD has been announced this week. And I think that'll be a great thing. And if we could get a little bit of an update on where we are with the head of football, even if nothing's going on, but just to say, this is where we are with things, I think would be really good. But, and I think hopefully an MD will have a sort of like this real overall picture. I'll be able to make some changes. I mean, I know that there have been talk about making some internal changes and I think that needs to happen.
And there was that document, wasn't there, earlier, which was from the Don's Trust that talked about the fact that Joe Palmer and the current CEO had seen that certain things just can't be done as an individual because of the scaling up of the operation effect. And so hopefully, with that MD in, they're going to start to think about how we reimagine those structures that we know they've been talking about. And so excited, because I think that is the start of where we're going to go. But I just also think, like, we haven't been at Plough Lane for that long. It's a massive change. It's a massive change.
I guess the issue on that, Adam, would be that we knew it was happening. We knew it was coming. So we could have, I mean, and admittedly there was COVID there, but we could have prepared, maybe we could have prepared a little bit better. But, you know, hopefully we're going to get to a situation where we've got the right behind the scenes structure in place, an MD with particular heads of departments, staff under those, everyone having I'd put the JDs up, having a transparent job descriptions, and then there are, each person's got a target, and there's reviews, you know, staff reviews and stuff like that. So if people aren't hitting those particular targets, then, you know, they go through their proper procedures employment wise, which I think that's the thing that's been called out, you know. So we want to know, you know, across the team, across everyone who's got a post there, that they have got targets that they are reaching. You know, I think that's important, and to know that those people are being reviewed, and also I think that, you know, people have a go at the you know, the WDON or the kit, you know, but they don't get paid. And Mark Jones is a great graphic designer. He's produced some brilliant work inside the stadium, and his the third kit that he's designed was like the winner of the best kit, you know, the best away kit. He does some brilliant work. He doesn't get. He's not on a retainer, which I just think is amazing. I would put him on the payroll, but you know, I just think, and then there are targets set. You know what I mean, or whatever. Do you know, it's just like. But people are doing things on goodwill. None of our program centers are getting money, are they? Everyone's doing it for love.
The love of being a program seller, indeed, like the love of having a regular, reliable mode of internet connection, as I've just not had for the last couple of minutes. No, program like, sellers. No, not
get we weren't even going to mention that. Me and Adam were covering it so well, we weren't even going to mention it. It was just going to be a professional thing that just, and you had to throw it in. We covered that. We covered your back for two whole minutes there, mate.
We love you. We love you greatly. The thing is, what would Adam do if he didn't have anything you had to edit out of the pod, you know? He wouldn't know what to do with himself.
We can't edit it now because you have to hear what we said. And it was really insightful and wonderful. And you'll have to listen to your own podcast. No, but I know. I think to wrap that piece up, you're right. I think that there is a bunch of things we need to think about where the paid people are, the targets they're set, those kind of things, how they're employed, where volunteers slot into that appropriately, people understanding what volunteering means in terms of their reward and recognition. It might also be that some people have been volunteering in spaces for a long period and that they may no longer fit the bigger picture, but we need to reward and recognise their time with the club in varying different ways and to allow people to move around. I mean, there's probably some people who have been stuck in positions thinking, man, I wish I'd be able to give this to someone else, do something else, you know, et cetera, where they feel they can't. So I think there's a lot of review to be done. And I think looking at the model of the way we run things and saying, okay, how much funding do we actually need to have the right kind of staff on the payroll? How many volunteers do we need? Do we need more, you know, do we need team? Do we need to break things into teams and have streams? You know, I mean, it's that kind of stuff. I mean, I did the program selling once, which was great. It was great fun. I got shoved down to the away end for an FA Cup game, which was most amusing because the first thing they chanted at me and Evie was, £3.50, you're having a laugh. And like, they were from up north, so they didn't appreciate the price of the program. Guysley, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's just funny when you hear things like people saying, oh, I hear they get free tickets for doing programs. It's like, no.
I mean, I think it's great. I think you can just start rumours. We should do one. We should start a rumour on this podcast. And I don't know. I'll think of something. We just start that. And get it out there.
Just... Yeah, see if the 10 people that listen, like, spread it like wildfire.
That many? Excellent. So glad about that. The one thing I would just wrap up on stuff about volunteers, being a long-time volunteer program seller, as has been mentioned tonight, is, frankly, fundamentally, volunteer fatigue is real, and I had it myself. But what I did do last season is I engaged directly with the club, sent straightforward emails both to Joe Palmer at the time and also to Bell, who's the overall revenue manager, director, I'm not sure what his exact title is, and they responded. And they came on Zoom calls when it was all still semi-lockdown stuff before the Bolton game and so on, and they responded to us, and we gave them the feedback relating to, even in a cashless stadium, accepting cash for programs themselves. And they didn't really appreciate that would be necessary and that would be something the fans would want to do. And so they said, fine, we'll arrange that. We'll sort out floats and so on and so forth. And they do that now for every single game. That is an example of supporters, just common or garden supporters as I am, and all our volunteers, program sellers are, engaging directly with the club, telling the club that they were wrong. And the club saying, okay, fair enough. We hold our hand up. We'll listen to this. What are your concerns? Fine, let's talk through this. Let's get some solutions for this. And likewise, that's how we managed to get golden goals back on the sheet, so to speak. And big up to Maria and Paddy and Jim and the team that are doing the golden goals this year. And the club have supported doing that. And again, they told the club some home truths about the way things should be, and the club responded. And so we've got that organised. And that's engagement properly between fans and the club, and the club listening to the fans, not just being completely alien in the ivory towers. That doesn't mean that some of the way in which some volunteers have been treated is particularly good, from what I've heard. And I'd like the Dons Trust they probably don't have time now before the elections, but I'd like the Dons Trust new board, whoever they may be, to make that one of the things they would actually address. And, you know, down to talking to some of the previous volunteers who have given up for justifiable reasons, and understanding why, not as a vendetta type thing or as a way of getting other people that are involved in the club out of the club, but actually understanding, okay, where were the mistakes made? How can we learn from these mistakes? Same as we all do with our annual reviews in our offices day in, day out.
I'm interested to know, Mark, as a volunteer yourself, and you're like a team leader of volunteers, do you get a review? An annual review, nope. Something that comes back to you or says, yeah, this is how you're doing? Because I think...
I don't get anything like that, no.
There needs to be some sort of... I think the review process, should it happen, should go down to volunteers as well. See how, see how they're doing, how they found the last year, what other things, what other opportunities do they want, that sort of thing. I just think I just think it'd be useful to have that in process as well. Even if it's just volunteer program sellers. And I've got to be honest, I'd say if program sellers were getting match their tickets, I wouldn't be against that. I mean, I think, you know, we rely on these people to deliver.
I think that's it. I mean, Matthew, that's the other thing. I mean, I think you're right. There needs to be, you know, that conversation to be had. Also, it's little things, isn't it? Of course, I'm going to talk about gamification, but, you know, I think we should reward the volunteers in some capacity. So, you know, give them sort of, you know, stars or whatever it is for each activity and volunteering thing they do. And at the end of that season, they can redeem those things to get something that connects them up, whether that's to get a signed or meet someone, you know, whatever. I just think that would be, you know, if I thought, oh, I did the match day thing once, I got a star or whatever, you know, and then I think, oh, maybe I'd do it again because I could get, you know, and I do think we've missed a trick with rewarding. I know they do the Volunteers Day Out, and that always seemed to be like, not, I don't know who that was directed exactly at, but I kind of feel like you could embed some systems to encourage volunteering in really positive ways. And I think Mark's right that some things we haven't got right, and I am also really keen to figure out that model of how volunteers integrate with a paid staff, all that kind of stuff, in positive ways. And some of that is probably reward and recognition across the piece.
I think that's a great idea, to be able to offer some sort of scheme of rewards that people can redeem, whether that's a match day ticket or something else. That's a cool idea. But like I say, the review process needs to filter all the way down.
Wrap that up. In the review process, you have accountability. The accountability on the pitch is the players playing. If they play well, they stay in the team. And if they don't, they don't. And if the manager doesn't manage the team well, ultimately, they'll lose their job, unfortunately. Now, from an accountability point of view, off the pitch, that hasn't happened as far as we can see. And I agree with you 100%, both of you. It needs to happen up, top, down, and bottom up to be able to make sure people feel included and feel listened to. And also, if there are issues and people frankly haven't done their jobs appropriately, then they shouldn't be in those roles, whoever that individual is. Which brings us very nicely onto our final topic for the day, which we can probably talk about for quite a long time, but we'll talk about it in more detail when they are appointed. But we understand, because the Don's Trust put a little tweet out about it, that we have a new CEO / head of operations, or whatever the title will be, coming in, and will be appointed, or at least announced, in the next few days. This is not a head of football operations. This is actually off the field, directing what's going on within the club structure itself. So what would you say is their actual specific priority that they need to address first and foremost?
I think the first thing I would be saying is, if you go back to that 2 minutes that you dropped out of this, then you would probably hear a really interesting, insightful bit about the appointment of the MD. I mean, if you want us to, we can repeat it. there's a lot on their plate, mate. There's a lot that they need to get. They need to get sorted. But certainly the review thing, I think, is an important thing.
Right, we'll wrap it up with some numbers then, just to finish off on a lighthearted note. Two quick numbers.
Yeah.
Number 43 is for Matt. 43 is the answer. What's the question?
43. What's 2 minutes before half time?
Do better than that.
I don't. 43. I'm rubbish with these. I realise I have absolutely no clue. Is it something obvious that's happened recently?
It's a combination of activities from the beginning of last season to now, including last Saturday.
The amount of points we've got over the last two seasons?
If only it was that many. Any ideas, Adam?
Like Matt, I'm also rubbish. Is it the number of blades of grass that were upended at free kicks?
It is, in fact, the number of points we've lost from winning positions since the beginning of last season.
Yeah, no.
Sadly. And that wouldn't get us up. Okay, on a more positive note, The final number is 189. And what does that refer to?
189, and it's a positive thing.
It's a current thing.
It's a current thing. 189. That's the amount of money in our bank balance?
You would like to hope it's a bit more than that.
18. I don't know. I have no idea. 189 is such a weird number.
Any idea, Matt?
No.
Okay, so the most...
Oh, the number of Ash United fans combined over the time we played them in the combined counties.
Ash United. No, close, but no cigar. So, the...
Oh, no.
Robot. You know who that would be? A robot on us, Mark.
That is Barry Fuller.
Yeah.
233. You're never going to get stats. Okay, so 189 is the number of appearances that Mr. Will Nightingale's made, who is the current player with most number of appearances. So he might catch Fuller if he plays for another year or so.
Oh, of course.
I like it that you went, oh, of course. But you
no, of course.
No,
yes.
I did.
Man who does never get stats.
No, I didn't. But if you have a big number, it's going to be appearances, isn't it? I should have thought about that and thought about who's... Anyway.
Never mind. Always a pleasure, never a chore. We've been the same old Wombles. This is episode 6. Thanks for joining us, chaps. Find us on the usual places, and we'll see you next week.
See you soon. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
See you later. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.